Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Well, hello, movie fans. This is Dimitri Peros at the Popcorn Pop Network. The Popcorn Talk Network. Anatomy of a Movie. And today we are going to dissect, break down Insidious 3. We'll talk about it as an individual movie and as how it fits into the franchise. And today I have very, very special guest hosts with me. Starting on the far right, we got Steph Z.
What's up? Say hello. Hey guys, how's it going?
And next to her, we got the wonderful, usually the wizard behind the curtain, Phil Zvidek, who decided
hello.
To come out.
That's right. And after you introduce our other panelists, I have something to say about them.
Good, of course. And then we have the very lovely, talented Chrisley Kennedy, who An Anatomy of a Movie in like 5 years.
Yeah, maybe 30.
It could be. And it's fantastic, Phil, because, you know, we have been shouldering the horror movies on our own, which is great. And I think it's a ton of fun. But there's no, we've actually said, how come there's no female representation? In fact, our last movie, Poltergeist, somebody commented, a lovely female commented, and she said, you know, I love horror movies, you know, they're not just catered towards men, and we have two women here.
Chicks dig horror too.
That's right, from Movie Chick.
Thanks.
We have Chrisley Kennedy, and we have Steph C, who's I'm very close friends. Oh, you guys are all my close friends.
Oh, Phil, I love you too.
But what
group
I like,
hug.
Chrisley covered it for Movie Chick. Mm-hmm. And Steph C covered, the junkets for Popcorn Talk.
I did.
So we have very good insight into this movie.
Yeah. Insight and speaking, not that she is any less important. She is part of the team. The person who is pressing all the buttons. We have Alexis in the booth today. So say hello, Alexis.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So this is the third in the franchise, a directorial debut for Leigh Whannell, who is known for partnering with James Wan since the beginning, since they started Saw and they kicked off their careers. What a way to kick off a horror career. So why don't we just start off? We'll start off from the far right. Steph Z, what were your impressions about Insidious 3?
I really liked it. And I come from I'm not the biggest horror fan as a whole because I'm a tiny bit of a scaredy cat. So some of them I don't really like to watch, or at least watch alone. I'll watch with people. We'll have like group viewings. But I really liked this film. I liked the whole franchise. I feel like this might have been my favorite one out of them.
Fascinating. Interesting.
Because I'm the type of person that wants to know why things happen the way they do, so it kind of.
But you
gives
saw
you
this
more.
First, then the other.
No, I saw the other two first.
Okay, great.
I watched them in order when I knew I was doing the junket. I watched the first one, then the second one, then the third one.
Got
so
it.
I mean, again, the first one, fine, it's great, but I like this one just as much.
Here's what I it goes beyond just horror. Horror to me, I really hate the cheap thrills, right? And people now use that so much, and you know, get any person that's afraid of horror movies, and they're going to jump in their seat because it's a physical reaction to a loud noise.
Right. Well, I think, too, a lot of people make horror equate to bloody, gory, scary, someone's going to cut you. Like, I think Jason. Like, if you say horror, I think Jason. And that's...
Which Paramount loves you.
Loves you.
And the Friday the 13th franchise loves you for that.
Right, but movies like this, I feel, are slightly different, and it's more of, like, a mind... movie, more like the paranormal series and stuff like that, which is, again, I thought was going to be super scary, but I could stomach that.
I mean, you know, part of it, I don't know, for lack of a better term, there's thriller, right? You're kind of coming up with stuff and that kind of stuff. So that's what really excites me, when you can get a good story behind it, and they have thus far. So I really enjoyed this. I prefer 1 and 2. I think they're, you know, maybe it's because I have such an affinity towards the Lambert family. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I like this as a prequel to all of them. Yes. Mm.
Yeah, I actually agree with Steph. I liked the third the best. And myself as well. I'm not the biggest horror fan. I was scarred at a young age with Attack of the Killer Clowns and Poltergeist and Chucky. And I literally couldn't sleep and still hate clowns to this day. So to me, when I think of horror, I think the same thing. I think Freddy, I think Jason, I think things that are going to haunt me at night and I'm never going to be able to sleep. And what I love about this franchise, and especially the third film, is the story. Like, you're going to get the jump scares. The horror fans are going to still be entertained and still going to like it. But for someone who doesn't necessarily love being scared, this had that great balance of really being able to be scared, but then have a really great story as well. And really, I love the way they tie everything into one another in this third film.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as a whole, like Insidious 3, where I don't think it necessarily was as good as the first two. However, it definitely wasn't anywhere below par than the first two. Yeah. I think that Leigh Whannell did a really good job. He had very big shoes to fill. And on top of that, as you mentioned, we weren't following that family, which, you know, in the first two movies, you really come embroiled into their story. And when they're not the focus anymore, and, you know, he does something, or Leigh Whannell did something that you know, I think was, it's a tough decision. Like, he's going to focus now on Elise,
yeah,
which makes sense, mm-hmm, but you're resting the shoulders of a movie on one character as opposed to this family that you care about, where Elise was secondary supporting. Very sweet. I mean, I liken her to Tangina in Poltergeist, and I think that Leigh Whannell and James Wan took their cues as being horror fans from movies like Poltergeist, because there are very similarities, at least being one of them. But she's such a great character.
She's a lot less creepy than Tangine as well.
Okay.
Yeah. She's super creepy.
You know, but you know, she's such a great character, and she's a sweet character. And those are the characters that in a horror movie, number one, she earns it. It's not like she's just a woman who's going to get killed. All right, whatever. That is a character that you become so endeared with that when shit starts to happen, you actually care what's going to happen or not happen to her. And it's great. So I like the fact that they took this prequel route and that they still interconnected, you know, the cross-dressing nurse person, the bride, the black bride.
Right.
And I liked how we got, like, how they still incorporated that family, but yet we heard that it through dialogue.
Right.
And now we know why this entity is after Elise, but now she's got a new mission, a new job. I like how she met up with her two Ghostbuster friends.
Yeah.
And that's,
again, know, is Leigh as well.
Who's Leigh as well. And, you know, I think as a whole, it's a very smart franchise. I think the sequel, part two, was very well and cleverly done. Where it you know, because it incorporates, you have to go back to one, but yet they incorporate like the further a little bit more, and I like how that's explained. And then in part three we see, why don't we just call it the further, and I like the origins of that. So, you know, I think as a whole, I think Insidious 3 lives up to the first two. I think it does a really great job of capping off and giving us a good Elise story that is deserved, but it's also well-earned. And I thought the scares are well-earned in this movie.
Yeah, despite it being obviously a prequel, it manages to ironically broaden out the world, right?
Yeah.
It explains how entities and so on and so forth, right, you know, can attach themselves, and I really like that, because you know, we've gotten a bit of history of that, but now this is great.
Yeah,
I feel like too, in the third movie, for me, you know, watching the first and second movie, it was like it almost set you up for the scare. Like, you kind of knew when they were coming. You didn't know how or how intense or from who, but you knew there was something coming. And because this one had such a story as part of the film, mm-hmm, that I was more so finding myself watching it and like literally jumping, because I was allowing myself to feel the story and be in the story and be scared by it. I feel like, you know what I mean? The first two, you kind of felt...
I don't know. I thought it was very... I think this entire series has been, for lack of a better word, story rich.
Yeah. Right.
And again, you know, you have somebody... Like, Leigh Whannell doesn't have yet... I don't believe he has the panache of James Wan. Horror is, to me anyways, it really is all about manipulating an audience. Mm-hmm. Okay?
For sure.
And James Wan, through his career, starting with, like, Saw. Okay? Like, if you look at Saw and then you go up to, say, The Conjuring. Or, I'm going to leave Furious 7 out of that. I'm just going to talk horror. Like, he has grown as a director, and he has certain techniques with the way he moves a camera, what he has in frame and focus.
Right.
Where Leigh Whannell may not have that flair, but he definitely has the technique. Mm-hmm. And when you're partnered with the James Wan, it's, you know, it's hard for me to believe that nothing rubs off.
Of course.
And I think the good stuff rubs off, and if Leigh continues to direct... He too is going to develop his style and his flair, and he could be equally as good as James Wan at directing horror movies. Yeah.
I love that they went the prequel route, because I know, like, as a movie fan, when you hear prequel in a franchise, it's scary because it could really go downhill fast.
Absolutely.
And it's a really scary thing. You're like, prequel, no. The fact that he did center it around Elise and Lin Shaye, I loved, because it is a great character, and horror fans love Lin Shaye. Like, she was just awarded the Godmother of Horror recently because fans love her in these movies so much, and I loved seeing her story kind of expanded.
Yeah, it was very... I think it's great. She's a very sweet woman. I met her once.
Super sweet.
Like, years ago, I got invited to the Jerry Springer movie premiere thing, and she was at the premiere party, and she was just standing by herself, and I recognized her from not only Something About Mary, but Kingpin. She's hysterical. I mean, this woman has been in some great raunchy comedies.
Right.
And I just went up to her. I said, Lin Shaye. And she's like, yeah. I go, oh my God, I love you. You're Magda. She hugged
Magda.
Me, and I ended up talking to her for like 20 minutes. She was as sweet as can be. So seeing her in a horror movie, which is a big departure, you know, and she really ends up being the cornerstone. It's hard not to love that character. And again, when you talk about gambles in horror movies, you know, that character died at the end of Insidious.
Right, yep.
And it was killed, and you're left, what? What the hell?
Yeah.
That is such a huge gamble, because if you had made a crap movie, you would have never gotten a 2. You would have never gotten a 3. And she was so endearing that the way 2 was structured, they had to bring her back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just great. So,
yeah,
she really is. She's become the cornerstone of this franchise, truly.
For sure.
So,
you know, and by the way, since we're kind of talking about her, what did you guys, when you guys interviewed her at the junkets or at the carpets, you know, what was some of the stuff that you guys got from her beyond just her personality?
She loves her work. That's what I got for her. She puts it all out on the table for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, for the junket, they actually paired Lee and Lynn together for my junket that I've done for this. And I believe Chris Lee got to talk to her separately for something else. But the two of them together, there's not a doubt in my mind why Lee wanted to investigate, so to speak, more of her character and tell her mm-hmm. character story. Because she, even though she's not, you know, the lead, so to speak, you know, a lot of people say Stephanie Scott's the lead or Dermot is, but she's really the foundation of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she owns that, and she's super sweet. Like, you can't not talk about her and not say how sweet she is, and she's talkative and she's lovely, and she wants you to, you know, you only get a certain amount of time to talk to him, and she like doesn't want to end, you know.
Yeah. Well, she wants to work. She wants to happily work.
Yeah,
and she
loves
wants people to know
working.
Why.
Yeah,
and she's so humble too. Is another thing that I loved about her. And she lit up when she talked about her character. She lit up when she talked about working with Lee and how, you know, he was the only choice as a director for this film. Like, it only made sense. Like, James did such a great job, but he had all these other projects, and Lee knew the story and the world so well that she was so excited to be, you know, directed by him, and that the set was a different tone with him, but it was still so much fun. And she just loves working and is so amazed that she gets to continue to do this. Like, it's like watching a little kid like open the toys on Christmas. It was so much fun to watch her just say, like, I can't believe I'm still doing this. Like, I can't believe I get get to do this every day. Like, it's amazing.
And I will say this about horror fans, because they're very similar to, like, the Star Trek or the Star Wars. They are very loyal fans.
And
like,
also very picky.
They can be very picky.
Yeah.
But they are loyal. Yeah. And if they like you, if they like your character, if they like... They will follow you. They will support you. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you died three movies ago, four movies ago.
It's all good. Yeah. You can come back.
It's all good. Like, you have a career going to, like, Fangoria conventions for the rest of your life. So, you know, I look at somebody, but I always respect the actor or actress who will jump on that bandwagon and appreciate that, because it could be very fleeting. And, you know, when you leave a legacy, even if it's in a horror movie, you know, it goes a long way to the fans if you show up and you say, hey, I love doing this. I want to continue to work. It really means a lot. And, right. You know.
It's so funny. She talked about that when she was getting awarded the Godmother of Horror Award. You know, her people didn't really tell her why she was going there. Hmm. And then finally were like, okay, this is what they're doing. This is why you're going. You're going to get this award. And she's like, I went and I expected it to be like this little thing with this little award and like not anything big. She's like, and I couldn't believe like the fans and the support and how excited they were. And I got this beautiful award and it was huge. And it was like she was just so enamored by the fans and the support of her and the love of her, like that she had never really seen or experienced firsthand, and she so loved that, and she was talking about how amazing horror fans are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I almost equate it to wrestling, and if they really, I mean, when she fought off in the final third of the movie, when she fought off, you know, her demon. Right?
Oh,
there
she
was
goes
just,
rip.
There's
yeah,
applause.
There
was
a
yeah.
That's, same here.
That's. Yeah. I mean, that's why she's got the award.
She could have gotten the Ellen Ripley award for that, because that, you know, it there was applause in the theater, and that really that is a testament that, number one, you can carry it off and make it believable, and now she's shouldering, you know, the responsibility of this movie is sort of kind of really on her shoulders.
Yeah. Right.
And but she carried it off. She was great. And, you know, being that she's the grandmother of horror.
Godmother. Yeah.
But that makes sense, because even the way she comes across, though, like, her character is very loving. And I found her, like, to be godmotherly-like.
Yeah.
And that's what makes her so appealing. She just happens to have this gift. And so, you know, all the other characters around her.
What ties it nicely, and, you know, because I want to kind of get your thoughts on the other characters, you know, what's nice is that she's very, also in the movie, they did it very nicely. She's humble and she wants to stay out of it. And but it's for a genuine reason.
Yeah.
And so I think that played nicely story wise into all of that. And then obviously we get a large portion without her. And then when she finally does come back in, we're, you know, it makes sense, and we root for that. It's like, where have
of
you
course.
Been?
Right. And I mean, how often do we see a heroine in a movie that kicks ass in a horror movie that's an older woman?
Yeah.
Like, we don't ever see that. So they take a risk by putting her in that position. And, you know, it's great to see the Stephanie Scott in the film, but, you know, you don't get to see a woman of her age kicking ass in horror, and it's fun.
You know, and to your point, Insidious 3 is not going to be given the credit for being a movie that perpetuates actresses and women's roles in Hollywood.
Right.
And Lin Shaye embodied that, you know, she could be soft and sweet, and at the same time, she's very strong and courageous in what she does and helping out a family. You know, and at the same time, the loss of her husband had affected this character. And, you know, people, I think, We're turning in this business as far as women's roles and things. There could be a lot more work done, but movies like, just because Insidious 3 is a horror movie, don't take away from the fact as to how it treats its lead characters. Mm-hmm. Because James Wan and Leigh Whannell never did. Mm-hmm. They always believed in this character as being a strong character.
Right.
So when you're starting to do these, like, oh, women aren't getting great roles, pay a little bit of attention to this little genre that tends to make Hollywood a shitload of money.
Yeah.
And look at people like Lin Shaye and what Leigh Whannell and James Wan have done.
I mean, and to add to that, it's like, you got to think about the two other stars of this film, Stephanie Scott and Dermot Mulroney, or however you say his last name. Both of them, it's their first horror movie.
Yeah.
So the confidence they had in Lin to carry this movie and this Elise character is just, you know, threefold because the other two, it's their first horror movie. So it's definitely, you know, I definitely think that's...
To me, I mean, I give, you know, I give them so much credit because, as Dimitri spoke, they've studied this genre, right? And to me, it really does, as we've said, it comes down to the story. And I think the greater lesson of all of it is, you know, however you treat your characters, like, whether villains or you know, good guys, you should love all your characters as a story writer. Yeah. And if you don't, then it's going to be a crap story. And the fact, and it's evident that they love all of their characters, even, you know, even the demons.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what makes them, to you, that's a fantastic point, because that's what makes them horrific. Because they take great care in writing that. And
yeah, it's not the stereotype.
Them, yeah. It's not just, you know, like, look, Jason, as you said, Jason has... He's earned his right in the Horror Hall of Fame with all the movies, and but, you know, it took a couple of movies before he became the Jason that we know and whatnot. But things like Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger, they had to earn their respect as in the horror pantheon of
things. Can't even hear their names.
So that when you come to an Insidious movie, when you're creating a brand new, like the Lipstick Bride, or I forget what that character's name is called, that's a scary character.
Yeah. Right. And, right. And that's totally to Lee. Right. I mean, yeah, his absolutely. Character development in these stories is brilliant and it's amazing. And he takes care of every single character and makes sure, especially with this third film, you understood why the characters, you know, especially in the further, were who they were, or how they got there, or why they became so nasty. And that character development is what makes the story so amazing. And you're sitting here and you're watching a horror film and it's supposed to be scary, but ultimately this story is about loss, and it's not just about being scared, and it's not just about the scary people and horror and the further. It's about tragedy and loss in your life and how you learn to deal with it, and that's something that's universal that everybody can understand and get, and then you get to get scared as well. So it's like you're really getting a really rich movie with this.
You're getting a rich franchise because you know, there are and when we talk about women too, another casting coup for me in this movie was Rose Byrne in the first two movies as the mother. You know, Phil, you and I, we did Poltergeist. I threw back a lot to the original. What really makes that movie stick for me is the family togetherness and that family bond. And Rose Byrne, the family, right now I forget their last
Lambert.
Name.
Lambert.
The Lamberts. In the first two movies, are you really care for them?
Oh yeah.
And Rose Byrne, who I think is a fantastic actress, she's been in comedy, she can do a horror movie. She played the mother so much that, like, you really cared for her, and that's the way that her role was written. You in a horror movie, you can be in, like, you know, Friday the 13th part, you know, 25, right? The victims are just victims, and you're just going to see Jason win. Like, you care more about your villain, but a really good horror movie, you should care about what your main characters are all about, because that is what builds great tension and suspense, and it makes you jump, and it gives stakes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in Insidious 3, we had some really good stakes because I really liked the girl.
Yeah.
I liked her character a lot. You gave a teenager smarts.
Yeah.
She has ambition. She wants to do things. And, you know, that's important, you know. And you gave a father who's really trying hard to you know, he's a single dad and he's got to take care of two kids. And
while dealing with the loss of his wife. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And his daughter's now being possessed and seeing ghosts. It's quite the predicament. Yeah.
Totally normal.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
But, you know, to Chrissy's point and kind of, piggybacking off you, you know, they gave her a very simple motivation, right? And so, therefore, it is that universal. And oftentimes, you know, you try to come up with this comp. It doesn't have to be that. It can be very simple, and that's beautiful enough. She's trying to reconnect with her mother, you know? And I thought they set up the diary really well in the beginning to be a huge thing that saves it in the end.
Yeah.
So I like the notion that it can be, you know, I mean, that's another risk that you take. That it can be simple, and let's go for it and tell it really, really well.
Yeah.
Simple, I find, is usually better, because then it allows you to tack on your own experiences to it more, and then you feel connected to the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I think Stephanie, I mean, I give this girl a lot of credit.
You know? Stephanie Scott?
Yeah.
She's amazing. Same here. It's tough. And again, she's not going to get the credit that you would, that I think would be deserved because she's in a horror movie. You know, people, you know, the industry as a whole will not take the horror movie as serious anymore.
Yeah. It's almost the soap opera of TV shows.
But even the soap operas get their own award show. You know, and horror movies, you're right. I mean, Stephanie Scott, you have to believe in her.
Because she carries it for the first 20 to 30.
Absolutely.
You have to. It's like, you know, if you told Christian Bale, right, with Batman Begins, if he doesn't work as Bruce Wayne for the first hour of that movie, the movie's toast.
Done. Right.
You know, and in this way, like, you could have people walking out the first 30 minutes before Lin Shaye has a chance to come in and save it.
Yeah.
Right.
And they took a risk. She'd never been in a horror film. She has done smaller roles. She came from Disney. I mean, that was a big risk taking Stephanie
on.
And it worked. I mean, her scenes, you felt for her. You saw her struggle with her mom. You wanted her to reach her mom because you saw this pain in her. And then all of a sudden, and you're seeing these scenes where, I mean, God, the scene where she's walking and the legs are oh my God.
It was
amazing. Like, it hurt to watch, but she was so good in it.
Yeah. That was one of the things I actually talked to her about at the junket. I was, you know, her character had so many different layers. And it was a emotional role. It was a physical role. It was tiring. And she actually wanted to do as many stunts as possible, which, again, adds to her as a person and what people give for films. But that scene where she breaks the cast off.
That's
my favorite scene of the movie.
And again, like, that character could have come off as being trite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wasn't written that way, nor was it performed that way.
And something with that, too, it wasn't performed that way because of the fact that Lee did certain things. Like, he got directing advice from the director of The Exorcist, whose name is escaping right now.
William Friedkin.
And I talked to him about that. And at one point, he put Stephanie in the closet and made her listen to heavy metal. You know, he did
certain things in the dark to
get her to perform that way. He would scare them on set. That was one of the things that he said. He's like, I like to scare them on set, too. He'd blow horns. He'd do all these things to get her prepared to do her best for this character.
Yeah.
So they just worked together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's also just another kudos to Lee is that, you know, a lot of times in horror, the teenage girl is dumb. And he really gave his teenage girl part. Yeah. He gave her smarts and he gave her, you know, a backbone and he made her what she was. And I appreciate that because I don't want to see the dumb girl running away in the bra screaming.
Well, you don't want to see the dumb girl running upstairs.
Yeah.
You know, that's become a stereotype of horror.
Right.
But, you know, when you look at some of the best horror movies out there, number one, you had The Exorcist and it wasn't so much that Megan was dumb. She was just an innocent child.
Yes.
And,
right.
And, but when you look at movies like Halloween, you know, Laurie Strode is not a dumb character. In fact, that movie goes out of its way to say Laurie Strode's smarter than all the other dumb characters.
Right.
You know, she's very book smart, but she's intelligent. You know, again, a character you can gravitate towards. When you look at Ellen Ripley, Sigourney Weaver in Alien, she is not a dumb character.
The ones that are done
they do that.
Yeah, exactly.
When you look at Heather Langenkamp in Nightmare Before Elm Street, the first one, she's the one that's piecing all this shit together about Freddy Krueger. Like, they're not dumb characters. Sometimes
if
the sequels...
Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes cliche to just make them meet
for the
villain, where Insidious treats its characters very smartly, treated the family very well and made it a family. It treats Quinn Brenner as a person who could have a future, and she's not just this, you know, a girl. Like, they could have easily made her, I'm on my, you know, always on her phone, not paying attention to the world around her. But Quinn Brenner is not that.
No.
She has her goals and aspirations.
Here's what I want to ask you guys, because you kind of hinted at it, but maybe you guys dug a little bit deeper. Because she has to play various levels, right? She has to play Quinn Brenner as Quinn Brenner, having lost her mother. Then she has to play, on top of that, kind of someone believing that she can get to her mother and be able to talk to her. And then eventually she has to play half of Quinn Brenner, and then half her soul is gone, and then eventually she's possessed.
Yeah. Right.
So these are very, you know, each, unlike the other characters, they're just kind of dealing with her, and they're, you know, they're, not to say that they're one-dimensional, but they are themselves. She is very much not herself throughout this whole movie. Right. And I'm curious if you guys went any further to discuss that with her.
I mean, I asked her what she did to prepare for the layers of this character, like, pretty much directly like that. And she, you know, she kept a journal, she mentioned, some of the scare tactics, but she pretty much said that any normal preparation that she could do, like, it wasn't until she was there doing it that she really was prepared. Mm-hmm. Because it's new, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, no one's ever been possessed.
Yeah, you can't do that. And she really, really gave a lot of props to Lee for getting her into character, for the whole cast and crew, for making her feel safe in being able to go there. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, a character like this, it's like to go there, to allow yourself to feel like this is really happening to you, and, like, you know, tap dance with crazy. You have to feel like you have a safe environment to do that, you know, so that you'll bounce back.
And I know I got to speak with Haley, who plays Quinn's best friend in the movie.
Yeah, she was
also
cool
her,
too.
Yeah. Also her first horror franchise film. And she was talking about the fact that what she didn't expect was that it is just as scary to be on set as it is when you're watching the movie. And I think because they create that environment on set and you are scary and it is dark and you are like what's around the corner because you don't know, because they're going to scare you because that's why they're there, you know, having that happen, she didn't expect that. She thought it would just be, you know, lights, camera, action. So it really helped all of them get into their roles a lot more.
Yeah, and you can tell, I think, and just going back, you know, even Dermot Mulroney as the dad, you know, again, he has a hard, you know, that role can fall into such cliche.
Yeah.
And he really, you got to play it straight. Yeah. Don't wink and nod and go, hey, I'm in a horror movie. Don't overact. Play it straight. And then the audience is going to buy it more. And I think with Insidious 3, you know, it works because everything is earned.
Yeah.
You know, the stakes are there and the jumps are earned. The scares are earned. The suspense is earned. And let's face it, from the get-go, you know, you say, you know, the directors was keeping everybody unsettled on set. As an audience, from the first frame of the first Insidious movie, you have that music that comes on.
Creepy.
With Insidious. It's just the staccato violin.
Yeah.
And the audience becomes unsettled right from frame one. And you're going, oh, shit. Okay, this isn't good. Red doors? That's not good.
Yeah.
So, I actually wore earplugs when I saw the third one in the theaters because I'm such a wimp. The first two I watched at home with the lights on and my dog. The second one we watched together. I was like, the third one I had earplugs in the theater because I was so afraid to get scared. Like, that's how much of a wimp I was. Yeah. Because they do set it up with that music and everything that you're like, oh, God. So I wore earplugs because I'm a wimp.
What I like, the, you know, you guys kind of talked about that there's a technique visually. I liked kind of the setting that it was very claustrophobic this entire time, and I, you know, I felt uncomfortable in that way. You know,
that's so funny. I didn't feel that at all.
Really,
we're always
in a. I mean, you have the whole city that you can go to. You have the whole outside for, you know, with
but
with
it was
her
so believable.
It was so believable,
and the visual aids to take you. Not only was the story being told, but the visual aids of the drawing with the door. I
get it, but it did, you know, I thought they used it very well.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me any less, like, not claustrophobic and be like, okay, I want to get out of here.
I got the sense that Leigh Whannell was using his space to the best of his capability.
For sure.
I have a feeling that, and I don't know this for sure, but I have a feeling that once James said, hey, I'm off to do Furious 7, you know, Lee says, well, I'm writing 3. They're like, you know, I'd like to direct. And it's like, okay, you'll direct, but this is the budget that you're going to get, you know? And he's like, and what Lee and James have done wonderfully throughout their careers is, you know, using those smaller budgets and getting the best bang for the buck. I mean, that's how Saw was made. Saw was made on a shoestring budget.
Right. And it's such a cult classic now. And people love it.
And what it has done, but when you look through James Wan's career in the first Insidious movie, mm-hmm. like I'll try to bring up some, because I brought up some, yeah, I had some like just a breakdown of like box office.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny because James Wan was so supportive of Lee directing this film, and they talked a lot throughout the project, yeah. and Lee was talking about how he would text James Wan while he was on the Fast and Furious set and say, what about this? And they worked so well together, and James Wan was so excited to see Lee kind of get behind the camera finally because, you know, he's been such a big part of the franchise, yeah, obviously. And
that, the first Insidious movie, the production budget was about $1.5 million. That was production. That's not including, like, their hard drives
or prints
and advertising. Insidious 3, we're looking at, they don't have a number. But what I can tell you...
It's a secret.
Well, I can say that it's total
$10
budget.
Roughly.
$10 million roughly.
That's what they...
And its total budget was about $30 million. So you're looking at, like, $10 million. Let's try to see if I can find what Insidious Chapter 2... was
which is still a very big jump from 1.5.
It was $5 million for part two. So
yeah.
actually,
so yeah,
call
I don't know.
Wrong.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't think that had anything
like $10 million
because they trust him with the like he's the writer. He's in the movie, so I feel like that would be kind of like a slap in the face if they're like, "Oh, you're gonna direct it? Okay, we're gonna."
He did take himself out. I felt like I don't know. I'd have to look at the full screen count of you know the first two movies versus this, but I felt he's always had a bigger role in the other ones.
Yeah, this was smaller.
Yes.
Yeah,
and sure. I think
But in the same sense, it didn't play.
No, I get that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah,
but
no, not that there's anything wrong. Right, I'm just saying that you know I feel like there was you know Speck's character wasn't slighted. You know, whenever, no. like, we learn the whole story of how they all came together right. and everything like that. So him being there less might have been either way, whether or not he directed it.
Yeah, no.
It fit within the story,
yeah.
for
yeah,
sure.
Perhaps.
And, you know, I also want to give such credit to those actors for the people in The Further. That Black Bride and all three is terrifying. The woman screaming at the little child
oh
to
God.
Be a girl is like, that's what my nightmare is. Like, my nightmare is that woman, like, putting that little boy in the wig and the dress and saying, you're not a little boy. Like, screaming at him. Like, those actors are amazing yeah. and get no credit.
Yeah, yeah no. And again, it's great how they brought the Black Bride into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With that, you know, because, and again, that family is mentioned in dialogue.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you helped little Josh out.
Yeah.
When he was a boy, and this is how, and how the Black Bride comes back in to say, I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
It's very scary stuff.
Well, talk about scary. Creepy. Actually, at the junket, they had The Further set up where you could actually go into The Further. And I'm not going to lie, I'm going to call myself out on it. I was too scared to go in. People were coming out.
You have
out.
A duty as a reporter.
People
as
were
a,
coming out. Crying.
They were.
I also have a heart problem, so I was like,
"They're literally."
I should have taken one for the team.
But, yeah,
imagine
right?
what we could be talking about right now.
We were standing outside. I didn't go either. I was way too scared because we were standing
People
outside.
Were Lynn came out crying. Lynn cried.
She's
Elise.
In the movie.
She's in the movie.
She's also
she
an actress. She fooled you.
She cried. No.
There was a girl
crying
that her friend had to literally go back in and get her because she literally just sat
stopped.
Down and started crying. She couldn't move.
Insane.
She was
so scared. Wait, explain this. So
it's
what
two,
is it?
It was two trailers.
So was
like
it like
back
a maze?
Yeah, like it was like a maze. And they're actually going to have it as part of these, you know, Halloween.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I don't know if it's going to be there, but they are going to have.
It was a tour.
It was a tour because Universal Disney.
And did you go alone, like
you have to go in alone.
And the first part of it is one of those virtual reality things. So you're wearing glasses.
Oh, Oculus.
And they bring you into The Further, and Lynn talks to you at the beginning of it, and they have, like, wind gusts and people touch you.
I think you put the glasses on in the end. Like, they bring you in, and then they say you're going to go into The Further, and you put these glasses on, and then, like, I don't like things touching me.
What was the average duration? Because if you're waiting on a per-person basis,
like
and some guy, like, gets stuck there.
Well,
You could hear like people get screaming.
Lost. It's not like a haunted movie.
Well, not that you're going to get lost, but again, as she mentioned, you crawl up in a little ball.
If it's an Oculus thing, you're talking, you know, that alone is usually about 5 to 7 minutes. It's
yeah.
a whole
yeah.
thing. But
no
it's
way.
A,
and then you
I've
walk
done this
through
before.
Something.
Have you ever done an Oculus before? I've done an Oculus before.
I wouldn't even do it for Jurassic World.
In fact, our nice partner in crime, Ian, in Chicago, we did it last year at Comic-Con for Game of Thrones. And I had never experienced this Oculus before, this thing. And Oculus Rift, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And man, oh man, Ashevitz, this thing was awesome. Like the sensory perception that you get. And I can only imagine for a horror movie, I'm surprised nobody did have a heart attack.
It was scary.
Like,
I wasn't going to chance it, so.
No, yeah. I put those glasses on.
I would love to have done that.
For Insurgent, they had it as yeah. well. And I put yeah. the glasses on for 2 seconds, and all of a sudden they had this fan with this gust of wind happen, and it literally took my breath away, and I had to take the glasses off. So there was no way I was doing one for Insidious, and I couldn't handle Insurgent.
So anyway, you sliced it. It was a success, whatever they created, yeah. because yeah. people were scared. And we're probably talking about it more. If we weren't that scared, we would have went through it and been like, yeah, they did this.
Sure.
It wouldn't have even been brought up. But the fact that we didn't do it because it was that scary and people were crying means they did it right.
Well, folks, that's great insider stuff.
Yeah,
I'm
they
sure
were
a lot
screaming.
Of the people who are watching our horror fans wish that they were there.
Here's
where,
like,
yeah,
you know, I mean,
it was set up downtown, like right outside the Staples Center, and there was a crowd of people like kind of lurking around like, what's going on here? I want to get in.
I like the fact of that's the level of detail that these guys care about. Because trust me,
right.
you know, you go to these various premieres, and for those of you that don't live in Los Angeles, you probably can't relate. But the point is that, you know, you create some little stupid thing, and you're like, ah, whatever, it's fun, it's a part of the movie. But when you create this to that level of scariness,
yeah.
obviously you care about the movie.
Yeah, they wanted the press to feel the movie. They wanted it to be a part of the movie and experience it. So not only did they see something, but they experienced, they understood the whole, all of it. And
yeah.
that's kind of what these movies do. They make you feel, and they want people
and
to
the fact
that
they toured it around the country as well
sure.
to let fans experience it is a really big
cool.
deal.
And I give a lot of that credit to Blumhouse.
For
yeah.
sure.
They, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about this movie too is, you know, thank God for people like Blumhouse and they're out there, because not only is there a passion for this type of movie, but then again, then they'll go off and do like a Whiplash, right? So they can go ahead and like, I'm going to make horror movies because I know that's my bread and butter, and I'm not going to shy away from it. I'm going to give it the respect that it deserves. But you know what? Every now and then, if I see something that I think is really special, like that's outside of the genre, we're going to produce that as well.
Right.
And again, they're smaller budgeted movies. You know, they prove that in this tentpole sandbox that the smaller guy can compete and make really good movies that make money on a much smaller scale and budget. And this gives the audience variety, which
right.
as a moviegoer, that's what you want.
Yeah.
I will go see the Jurassic Worlds and the Avengers and all this stuff, but it's great to know that this little horror movie was made for $5 million and it scared the crap out of me, and I got as much enjoyment as entertainment, you know, without the superhero.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
here's my
stuff.
Only fear with Blumhouse, and you'll probably be able to speak to this or Phil more so than I, but one of the girls from the Movie Chick just did an Insidious 3 review, and she put up a great point that the only fear she had, and I agree, was that there were scenes from the Insidious franchise that felt eerily similar to The Conjuring. And so you wonder at that point, like, you don't want them to get lazy in their filmmaking with horror mm-hmm. and kind of fall back to that sameness of their film. So I hope that doesn't happen.
Okay. I'll address this in three ways. One, I'll do the Easter egg last. Blumhouse may have done The Conjuring, but it was also Lou and Ellen James Wan.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So
for sure,
you got
the
that
style.
Going on right there. So, and I think the reason why The Conjuring, it was one of my top, like, scary movies within the past 5, 6, 10 years. I mean, it's a very scary movie. Very well done. Again, done on a very limited budget. So it wouldn't surprise me that that there was a similarity there. It doesn't surprise
yeah.
me. I didn't go, oh, he's just ripping off The Conjuring. One thing about Insidious 3 is that I felt, or this the entire franchise, is that it better played homage to other horror movies that I felt like Poltergeist,
right?
Other than ripping off, I never felt that the Insidious franchise ripped anything off. Agreed. They made it its own. Now the Easter egg is Elisa's dog. Anybody remember what Elisa's dog's name was? Is in the movie?
No.
It's Warren.
Yeah.
Warren, after the Warrens, who are the actual ghost chasers, hunters, paranormalists in The Conjuring, and who eventually went to do the Amityville Horror.
Right.
And, and Annabelle, which was also produced by, you know, so I get how these similarities happen.
I've been to that Amityville house. It's
really
creepy. Yeah.
So I get all that stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you know.
Which is cool, though. It's like a shout out.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
You know, we are going to get another Conjuring movie.
Right.
So, and from what I understand, James Wan's coming back.
Guess I need to see the first one.
Oh, yeah. If you thought Insidious 3 or any of the Insidious movies were scary, Conjuring ramps it up. And James Wan is working, and what they were working on. All his cylinders are firing. It's great stuff, but the Insidious as a franchise. Now, one thing that I was thinking is, geez, are they going to make another one? And I was looking at, you know, we've got a budget at about $30 million all in. Its opening domestic gross is $22.6 million, not too shabby. It's to date total gross is about domestic gross is about $30 million. Now, its worldwide box office is $45 million.
Awesome.
So not too shabby for a little horror movie going out there. Now, Rotten Tomatoes, it's out of 58%, which for a horror movie of this ilk is anything above 50, I find as almost a norm. There are the exceptions like a Babadook or It Follows that would get huge, like in the 90s, high 80s.
I don't always like to go by Rotten Tomatoes either. Like, I love them and I love their people, but I feel like they're not always a great representation of the fans that actually watch the movies.
And
before we continue, speaking of fan surveys and everything else, because we're always trying to figure out how we can best gauge our fans. We are in conjunction with Podcast One, that's Podcast ONE, conducting a listener survey. You know, for you guys that listen to this show and other popcorn talk shows. So all you got to do is go to podcastone.com and click on the link that says listener survey. You know, it's kind of everywhere. So, you know, take a minute. You'll find it, I promise you. So give it a minute before you give up. And take the survey. It takes about 3 to 5 minutes, depending on you know your pace of it. But we hopefully really take your time with it and give us the right answers so we can better improve the programming.
Yeah,
so that's
absolutely.
podcastone.com.
That spells podcast
how we can
one.
Do better.
Yeah, right. Please. And now that you are speaking of audience, the audience reaction to Insidious 3, it's CinemaScore, which is a polling company that goes out opening weekend to gauge reaction, and then they do a poll, and it's a grading system, whether A, B, C, D, or F.
Right.
And this movie got a B+. So the audience, for this, tended to like it. And they get, and again, for horror can be one of those tough things. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but if you are going to a horror movie, you're usually surrounded by people who are like-minded and enjoy horror movies.
Right.
Every now and then you get a movie like The Conjuring, which when word gets out that is so good, you can get some of the non-horror fans to come in.
Right.
But a B+, isn't too shabby for this kind of a movie at all.
I like that much better than the Rotten Tomatoes score, because it is the audience reaction. And I know I was saying this to you before we started, is like you were just saying, this franchise was something that brought me over to horror, because I was deathly afraid to watch a lot of these movies. But, you see something that's so rich in story, and, I had to cover it. I had no one else to cover it. I had no choice. But then you watch it and you see something that's so wrenching story. Now I'm like, now I want to see The Conjuring. Now I want to go. I don't know if I'm ready for Evil Dead, but it did really.
I don't think you're going to be ready for The Conjuring. I'll be honest with you. Now, there's one other thing that we haven't talked about yet. There is, these movies all share Insidious Chapter 2 and Insidious Chapter 3 all have something else in common. they are all rated PG-13.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there are PG-13 horror movies that really still at PG-13 deliver in intensity and horror. You know, we did Poltergeist, which is also PG-13, which doesn't deliver in that. Now, I do like a good rated R horror movie, like The Conjuring. You know, The Conjuring, when you're rated R, you are allowed a few more liberties,
right,
so to speak, whether it be in the makeup or in setting up your suspense. But I think for a franchise, a horror franchise of PG-13, to do as well as it's done and to maintain a level of quality that horror fans are going to like at PG-13, mostly when you hear, oh, there's a PG-13 horror movie coming out. You're like, ugh.
Right.
Why? Not Insidious. Not this series. It's done very, very well. So,
yeah. I appreciate the less gore and less blood and less chopping up of people to a great story that's going to make me jump out of my seat and be scared to go to home.
Treated like a 13-year-old.
Yeah. Totally.
I want to know, like, Alexis, live reaction is, what are people saying if they are, in fact, tuned into us, which I hope they are? What are folks saying about Insidious 3 and what we might have to say, and how are they chiming in?
Some might be too scared to watch me.
Are they too scared? Are they too scared?
Did they enjoy it? How have they enjoyed this franchise?
While Alexis pulls that up, you know, for me, what I do like about it, and in terms of the, you know, it's always really hard to judge horror because, okay, what's the horror? If it scared you too much, then it's like, okay, ooh, no, it wasn't a good movie. It's like, I was like, well, why are you saying that? It scared you so much.
That's the point.
Yeah. Other times, like, ooh, you know, it just becomes the criteria. Everyone has their own criteria. I mean, you said Jason is your criteria, you know, is the penultimate of horror. For me, it's different. And so I think we can sit here and define a Western much easier than a horror.
For sure. I've got some good pictures of Western.
Well, you know, but you have a great point, Phil. And you're right, because many people can categorize a movie like Silence of the Lambs. Some people categorize that as horror, but you can categorize it as a suspense drama, mm-hmm. as a cop drama, a thriller. You know, it's tough to categorize. I think sometimes we are too quick to judge, like a Friday the 13th, because, oh, that's horror. That's what horror is all about. But no, that's not what horror is all about. Yes, that's a faction of horror. But, you know, Psycho. What's Psycho? Psycho a horror movie?
That's a drama.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. Is the category of horror or the genre of horror too blanket statement? Should there be a different category?
Well, they keep on trying. Like, you know, when Saw came out and the Hostel movies came out, I was at Lionsgate and they came up with that. Especially Hostel. It was a term that I hated. And I even hate to bring it up. I don't want to perpetuate it because I think, hopefully, thankfully, it's dead, but torture porn. I always hated that.
That doesn't fit.
That's not even nice.
You know, but I see where it came from. I just never liked the wording. But people try to make subgenres. Like when people credit Halloween and then Friday the 13th as being the godfather of the slasher film. You know, but movies like The Hills Have Eyes and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which came up before them, were equally as uncomfortable and as gory.
But it is, for me, all of those movies are the movies that ring to horror for me. This is more of a mind experience that scares you.
Yeah.
You know, rather than like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like all those movies, it's like someone's coming after me with a saw. Like it's a very movie. Direct. Right. So I feel like that's somewhat changed.
But what do you categorize a movie like Alien as?
Some not a just horror movie.
No, me neither.
An action movie or Alien? A thriller. Or yeah,
some people put it under horror.
Sci-fi.
Like that horror is the one genre that's the most subjective out of all the genres.
It very much is. And like,
see, I don't know that I like that. Because it's just you don't know what you're getting. That's what I think my problem with it is that, you know, if you think of an action movie, You know you're get you know what you signed up for to go. Right. Nowadays, if you're like, yeah, you want to come see this horror movie with me, you don't know what you're getting.
And a lot of times,
I feel like it's confusing a little bit.
And a lot of times, I think studios, you know, will say that a film's a certain genre to get an audience, but it's not really what it is. Because like Aloha, they said it was a romantic comedy. That was not a romantic comedy.
Sure,
that was a drama.
Yeah.
That was a very serious drama, not a romantic comedy.
Are you saying that studios can cheat marketing?
Yeah, like the marketing.
No, that never happens.
The marketing, you know. I think that's what happens a lot, and it's sad.
So, Alexis, were you trying to get our attention? Were you going to chime in?
Yeah, no one in the chat has seen it yet, but they are going this weekend.
You better be going now.
Insidious 3 yet?
No, not yet.
What are you waiting for?
It looks like some people are scared to watch it, or they haven't seen it, or they don't want to see it, and then some people only saw the first and second one.
And why didn't they want to see it, did they say?
Too scared?
Nope, they didn't say why.
You know what? Hey,
regardless. Alien is a sci-fi horror film.
Yeah.
Total sci-fi.
You know what? I still thank you for tuning in anyways.
Yeah, guys.
You do realize that this is very spoiler heavy, right?
And so. I also appreciate that, you know, people that saw the first and second, and I heard this a lot and on Twitter and on social media, that they were afraid that the third film wasn't going to be good, because usually sometimes they're not, and they were afraid of it being a prequel. And I think, you know, sitting here and talking about this film and dissecting it the way we are, like, hoping that people will now go see it, because it's an amazing film that shouldn't be missed.
Well, much like Chapter 2, mm-hmm. which really took some bold steps in making a sequel.
Yeah.
Chapter 3 did something bold, and, like, you know, it didn't cheap out on making it a prequel. It really, it helped tie into this Insidious universe that we've come accustomed to, and gave Lin Shaye a chance to shine, and they really built upon her character. Now, if they were to say, that's all we're doing for Insidious, I'd be happy. You made a whole incomplete franchise, more so than a lot of other types of movies have. If you decide to go a 4, I would go out of curiosity to see, am I going to get more Elise stories, like maybe one more story before she gets to the family and helps that haunting? I don't know.
I think if you get to 4, then you almost have to come up with a formula that can be very standalone pieces.
I agree.
Yeah, it combines everything but is standalone.
I think if this was it, I'd be 100% happy, and I wouldn't blame them in any sort of way. But I think to Chrisley's note, I think it just speaks larger about just movies in general, of how, like, you know, because we are so, we just want to see so many, we just want to see a good movie, and the fact that in the past we've given ourselves away to these types of things and been fooled, that we're just that distant from wanting that, any relationship with a movie in that way, of like, hey, he fooled me again, I'm not doing it.
Right.
But in the same sense with this movie too, even though we are, you know, saying lots of spoilers, and not for you guys out there watching that have not seen it yet, there's still so much more that we haven't talked about.
Right. Is there anything that you guys think that they could have done better, or should have done, or didn't like that they did in this one?
I think my only, you know, and I nitpick it from love always, the only thing that I didn't like, I thought the wannabe boyfriend and the neighbors, you know, obviously the older woman, you know, she kind of paid off in different ways, but the wannabe boyfriend didn't.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like that was just making Stephanie Scott's character more believable. Like, that's what's going on.
Yeah, but I think you can round it off. I mean, I like the level between reality and kind of still having an artifice, but if you're going to, I don't know, I don't mind if they use an artifice to, you know, and kind of tie things more together than they would have perhaps in real life.
Right. Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great question, because as I think of the movie, and when I thought of the movie after watching it, there wasn't any one thing I could really point my finger to. Again, I enjoyed what they were able to accomplish, being in that one setting, that apartment complex. They really made it, like, seedy. I loved the neighbor with his wife. That actually was a very sensitive, and I thought a very key moment in this movie, in her passing and all that thing. There's nothing that I can think of.
A moment when Lin Shaye's character, I thought the self-loathing was going to get old, but it didn't.
Mm-mm.
Right? Because there was that balance. And you know, I don't know, maybe it's just me and the people that I deal with on an actual personal day-to-day level that I just
self-love.
No, I just, I just have no feelings towards it where I'm like, you have no pity for me or sympathies. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I didn't like was there were some moments where I knew it was going to happen next, and that kind of was a little disappointing because I did really enjoy this franchise, but specifically the moment where she's in the bedroom and she's knocking on the wall and
it knocks back.
Oh yeah, you knew that.
Like
was coming.
I knew that he wasn't in the room. Like there were those little moments that it was just like you know it's going to happen.
But this is where I think that James and Lee succeed because they take something like that, but then they finish it.
Yeah, they do.
But they finish it off because where you may expect that she's knocking to nothingness, so to speak, and something's knocking back, which you don't necessarily expect, are the hands coming from the ceiling.
True.
That's the true creepy jump part.
Yes.
And they turn that, and that's what makes them special filmmakers.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, no, that was the same. I don't want to give it completely away, but the car accident, we'll just say.
Yeah.
Was
oh, my God, yeah.
It's,
that is a crap driver.
Come
that
on!
That is one of the world's crappiest drivers. Yeah, I'm like, how did not see this person?
Yes.
But still, the fact that, again, there was moments where, and maybe they want you to feel that. Maybe they want you to trick you into thinking you've got it figured out by the knocks and by the stuff, and then you have something like that happen, and you're like, whoa!
But, you know,
come
but
on, you didn't see that coming. No,
I didn't see it coming, but again, world's crappiest driver.
Yeah.
If you didn't see her,
I'm just saying.
But again, what I'm going to say where Lee Whannell really excelled is, this is a device in horror. The very first time that I can remember it being used is in the movie Final Destination, which in that movie, you know, a girl gets leveled by a bus.
Yeah.
Okay.
She does.
And it comes out of like nowhere. In this movie, the way that scene was set up, because horror is about where are you focusing your audience's attention.
Right.
And at that point, she had just seen this creep thing waving at her, and she's like, what? And you as an audience, it's like, you're like, what is that going on? And then, bam!
Yeah.
So
brilliant.
They just turn it on its heels, and they add that extra level.
Right.
You know, it's one thing, and again, I'll bring up The Conjuring. It's one thing to have a creepy moment in a room, right? And then have the camera wipe up, and there's an entity on a dresser,
right?
It's another thing to have that entity jump out at you after you've done the scare. Is the cliche scare is room sound? There's somebody there, but then when it jumps off, that's
you're talking about using
the
Conjuring. When they used the camera,
correct?
They went into the closet and she's not there because she planted.
Yes.
I really did like that.
Yes.
What did you guys think of Jack? Did you guys believe that was going to be Jack or not? I didn't, but I didn't think it took away. You guys are shaking your heads. Meaning, remember, she's in the further,
right?
And there, and then there's Jack. Right away.
Yeah. No.
Her husband.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No.
I knew that.
Wait a minute.
No.
We're not talking Titanic here.
No.
It's funny because I
needed a minute too.
I was like,
wait,
who's
your
Jack? That's why I was like, clearly it didn't do anything for me because it didn't resonate. But you kind of knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I like that she knew, which empowered her character more, that right away she was like, no, my Jack would never say that.
And you know what I mean? So, I was sort of kind of a little bit spoiled in that scene because on the great television show Supernatural, there was an episode in which Sam and Dean Winchester, they unleashed a box of a demon that came out and tried to get you to commit suicide. It wouldn't do the killing, but it got into your head and made you kill yourself. And there was a similar scene where one of Dean's compatriots who he had to put down and a couple of seasons ago, shows up and tries to get him to commit suicide. And it was almost, the dialogue was very similar. And so when she sees her husband and he says, you know, you can be with me if you just, I can't do this. This has to be your decision. And I'm like going, hey, I just saw this in a Supernatural episode.
Well, the good news is you can skip season 4, episode 12 of Supernatural, whatever the case may be.
No, I'm just saying, like, I sort of saw that coming. But I think it's pivotal because that is Elise's turning point.
Yes.
That is when Elise says, you know what? This is my calling. Whether I know what my destiny may be, this is my true calling.
Right.
I'm here to help people, and I do that job pretty well. And that's what I found was important. It was an empowerment thing where she says, I'm not going to give in to these spirits, and I'm not going to, like, lay to waste. I'm going to help these people. So, yeah. You know, even though I knew it was coming, it's still, and it was played great by, it was, again, Lynn Shay did a great job.
She's right. There you go.
Yeah.
So I think we covered a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think we did really good for this little horror movie. And since we're talking about horror, I got to throw this out there. Jaws. Horror movie?
No.
No.
Action.
Really?
Not for me.
No. I don't know about it.
Again, it goes under.
Not going to lie. I've never seen Jaws.
Come on!
All right, you're officially kicked off the panel.
Failed.
Alexis, kill the lights.
I like to swim and surf way too much.
Yeah, but see, again,
I'll watch it. I'll do it. We have to have a viewing together.
Sure. It's going to be out in theaters June 21st, I believe.
But I still wouldn't think of that as an action movie. Sorry.
I don't think it's as an action movie, but when it came out, it sure the hell...
It's a horror movie.
It scared the hell... It scared people the hell out of going swimming. Movie. And if you're scary... I mean, I don't know. It's... Again, the genre can be classified in so many ways that some people have put Jaws as one of their top scariest movies.
Yeah.
And if it's scaring you... You know, that could, by definition, be into horror.
Yeah.
So let us know what you think.
They say it's a drama thriller on IMDb.
Not action.
Yeah.
Thriller.
I mean, we're going to have this debate. We should have a whole show called Is This a Horror or Not?
Is This a Horror Movie?
Yes.
Coming to Popcorn Talk Network next week.
Yes.
Do it.
Yeah, your name.
Who knows?
Yeah. It's a good idea.
It's a really good idea.
So, and so...
You gotta see some more horror, though. You haven't even seen Jaws.
I like to surf.
Yeah, so then it's scaring you out of the water.
It scares me.
It's a horror movie.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
It's horrifying to me.
All right. Well,
there we go.
I guess we're wrapping up. Why don't we start off on the far right? Steph Z, where can people find you?
You guys can find me on all the social media platforms at IAMSTEFZ. Keep the conversation going. Say hello.
And of course, you can follow us here at Movie Anatomy or the Popcorn Talk.
And you guys can follow me on all the social medias at Chrisley and also at The Movie Chick with 2 Ks like me.
That's great. And you can find me at DMovies1701. Drop by the Twitter, say hello. Always read your comments when I go on a YouTube. It's very important for the show. I'm glad that we have a live audience that you come on in. We will continue. We still have a whole hell of a lot of summer to go. Jurassic World, Mission Impossible, a Guillermo del Toro movie, Ted 2. Tons of movies, so stay tuned.
And then the fall.
And then the fall.
And then Christmas.
And then 2016.
And then the new year.
So,
and then Valentine's
Day.
So
many movies, so little time, but we're going to put them all down for you. Stay tuned also for Spy. And most of all, we really do thank you for tuning in. Bye, movie fans. We'll catch you later.
Boom.
See you later.
Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff. We would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.